This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Do you talk? You know, words, blah, 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 like that? Can you do that? Blah, blah, blah. See, this is called a rock. Rock. Good. No. That is a tree. That's right! Well, my own giant robot, I am now the luckiest kid in America. This is unbelievable. This is the greatest discovery since... I don't know. Television or something. I gotta tell someone. I should call some... No, they'll panic. People always wig out and start shooting when they see something big like you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, well, actually, all week long, we have kind of a future-focused, sci-fi-y, robot-y kind of vibe for you. Tomorrow, we'll be reviewing Love, Death, and Robots. And for today, we are talking about 1999's The Iron Giant, which was actually Brad Bird's directorial debut. So this is my first time watching it, but it wasn't either of yours. For both of you, it was a rewatch. How'd you find it?
You know, I know what I'm getting into when I watch The Iron Giant. I've watched it so many times over the years, but it's been a bit of a gap this time around. I don't know whether it's just the time that I watched it in or I don't know, maybe it's an emotional period, but I found it as emotionally a roller coaster as it always is, in a really good way. The way Pixar is, the way really good storytelling about children and big emotions are. Oh, I loved it. I've loved it every time I watch it, and I loved it this time as well.
And they also say the Iron Giant is the foundation for a lot of Pixar movies, like an indirect, like an unofficial inspiration, right? A lot of people quote the Iron Giant as being their source of inspiration for the kind of animation they want to make or the kind of stories they want to tell. This was my maybe third or fourth time seeing it. And I don't know if I should admit this, but even the first time I saw it was maybe like 2001, 2002. I thought the movie was a lot older than it was. And I think that's because of the way it's drawn or the animation style. But even watching it for the first time, I thought that I was watching a movie that's at least 15 years old. And I didn't realize that at the time I was watching something that was like barely 2.5 years. I don't know what to do with that information, you know, whether it's a win for the movie and the kind of artistic style they were going for, or if it works against the movie because it didn't do so well in at the box office. But yeah, it has the same effect that it did the first time, second time, third time.
So I think part of the reason why it feels older is definitely the animation style, but it's also the fact that the story is set in the 50s. I think that goes a long way towards it, because when you first watch it, it's not immediately clear. It doesn't signal that to you off the bat. You know, there's no one walking around in hoop skirts. Elvis isn't playing. You know, it takes a while for you to recognize, oh, okay. And that's just one of the things that I found unusual about The Iron Giant, right? This being my first go. I think when it first came out, I was just a little bit too old and I was transitioning out of watching animation and cinema. So it just kind of passed me by. But it tells the story of the titular Iron Giant, who falls from the sky, essentially, is an alien of sorts, and kind of lands in this small town in Maine and befriends a young boy who then tries to keep him a secret because the government, this is of course at the height of the Cold War, is just viewing it as an intrusion or rather there's one agent who's very much on the case but everyone else isn't. Anyway, and I thought that it was really adult. So it is very kid friendly, but it's a very adult film, and the themes of it are also so adult, right? This idea of you deciding who you are. I think Brad Bird described it as, what if we told the story of a gun who has a soul mm-hmm. and doesn't want to be a gun?
I think that really captures the heart of what the whole film is, right? Because it straddles all of these themes and even outside of the movie, issues that, and I think that's partly why it didn't do as well as it did when it came out, because it sort of sits maybe not so comfortably between adult entertainment and child entertainment. It also came at a time when hand-drawn animation was kind of falling out of favor a little bit in favor of CG animated stuff. Even the setting of the Cold War and Russia versus America, it all feels a little bit slightly out of step, not in a way where the film is bad, just that it came out at the wrong time. Perhaps it was targeting the wrong audience. But with the benefit of time, I think is when, and I think that's why the film has become such a classic, because when you watch it outside of all of those constraints, you realize what a beautifully made movie it is. It also made me really sad that Brad Bird kind of stopped working with Pixar, because really he did The Incredibles and then he did Ratatouille. And Ratatouille is actually, for me, very similar to Iron Giant in the sense that it also deals with very adult themes, but in a way that's presented as a childlike sort of lens. It made me feel sad that he doesn't make movies with Pixar anymore, because I feel like that's something that could have been really, really special.
Hmm. And in that way, I feel like the Iron Giant is ahead of its time, or it was ahead of its time. Because if it came out maybe 10 years in 2009, let's say, it would have been like, oh, this is so great and so mature and it's so good for like an animation and people should go see it. Like, it would have won awards and stuff. I think people were not ready for the sort of Pixar storytelling, quote unquote, that the Iron Giant tried to do. And also because, like you guys said, it's very adult. Like, a lot of the themes would fly over like an average kid's head. And there's not a lot of Iron Giant-ness for them to tap into, so there's not a lot of action. But there's a lot of stuff to dig into in terms of like, you know, what does it mean to be alien, or what does it mean to be the other, and what does it mean to be this huge and this frightening in a world that would like antagonize you and stuff. And in that way, it's kind of sad, because I feel like the Iron Giant could have done with maybe not a sequel, but some sort of follow-up in that same style or that same storytelling. Because it came out in 99, we didn't see a lot more of that sort of product, or there was no sort of like pop culture fallout for a long, long time until maybe about 10, 15 years after.
I mean, even the fact that it's based on a Ted Hughes story kind of tells you everything that you need to know, you know. It has a literary reference, and I think that's very much present in the style of the film. I really, really loved the fact that it was set in the 50s. I think that is so important to the storytelling. And it is done so effectively, partly because a lot of it involves hiding an iron giant who's eating up scrap metal and pulling down towers and stuff. And I just don't think with satellites you could do that. Between satellites and smartphones, the Iron Giant just wouldn't function in almost any other era, right? You need a time where cameras take a very long time to develop photos, where there were fewer people and children could disappear for hours and nobody would wonder. But I think in terms of what there is for kids, there are scenes where Hogarth, who is the child, and the Iron Giant are playing, and that's just, I think, pure fantasy. It's so lovely, because anybody who has ever wanted a giant friend who could lift them up and run through the forest while you view the world from, I don't know, six stories up would identify with that feeling. And I think Hogarth is so wonderfully written and voiced that it's such a good entry for children into the movie.
And the drawing of comic books, which is such a the themes particularly, and the I suppose the ideas behind why comic books at that point in time are so inspirational for a young boy. Because again, comic books have evolved a lot more. If this film was set now, someone's idea of a comic book hero would be very different. It would be Dark Knight. It would be complex. But when you look at something in the 1950s, it's Superman. And that kind of sets a particular mood or theme for the film and really draws on what a child would see, or how a child would look at something like the Iron Giant versus how adults would. And actually, speaking of the adults, I really like how well the film handles its adults, because a lot of stories about children tend to make their adults very caricaturish, or they're just the roadblocks to the kid having to go on an adventure. But this movie, it has a villain. It's a sort of caricaturish villain, but in a good way. He's an FBI agent. But then it has people like Hogarth's mom. It has the scrapyard owner, Dean, who really is sort of like the town outsider in some ways, but is also just a really good person who understands how Hogarth might feel. And I feel like all of these things add to make it more than just a kid having an adventure with a weird friend kind of story.
Did you guys feel like the FBI agent or the government agent looked like Conan O'Brien? Because I couldn't get that picture out of my head. The hair, and even the lankiness, the sort of like signature lankiness that he has. He looks very
When you
much...
mention it now, I can't unsee it.
He looks like Conan O'Brien meets John C. McGinley.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah, he's got a John C. McGinley vibe. I was going to say I love the agent so much, partly because he's horrible, but also because while we're talking about that mix of child and adult, right? This idea of adults being scared of the other and of reacting out of fear, I think he embodies that so well. We're talking today about The Iron Giant, which was released in 1999. Didn't make a lot of money back then, has since achieved cult status. We want to know, have you seen The Iron Giant? Rewatched it recently? Watched it when it first came out? You can let us know. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. And tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
I know you feel bad about the deer, but it's not your fault. Things die. It's part of life. It's bad to kill, but it's not bad to die.
You die?
Yes, someday.
I
don't know. You're made of metal, but you have feelings, and that means you have a soul. And souls don't die.
Soul?
Mom says it's something inside of all good things, and that it goes on forever and ever.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. Together today, we are throwing it back to 1999, and which doesn't feel that long ago, and then you do the math and it's a bit horrifying. Anyway, we are talking about The Iron Giant, which was Brad Bird's directorial debut. Before we continue talking about the themes, because I think there's a lot there to do with grief and friendship that we haven't even touched on. It's a very deep film. I wanted to talk about the voice acting because The Iron Giant is voiced by Vin Diesel. And I just, much as you were saying earlier, Sharmila, that you wish Brad Bird was still working with Pixar, I wish Vin Diesel did more animation.
With Groot and Iron Giant, I think he would be great. I never knew Vin Diesel was the Iron Giant until much later. Like maybe
they also look alike.
This is true. This is true. But yes, and the whole film has such a great voice cast. So I think this is just a product of me not having paid attention to the voice. But I was also surprised that Jennifer Aniston was the mom, for instance, or that Harry Connick Jr. was Dean. And all of these people, they do such a great job. I feel like everyone, including Hogarth, the Iron Giant himself, there are times when the voice cast makes a big difference, and there are times when you don't care who they are. And this is definitely one of the films where they are voice acting, for sure.
Vin Diesel, I think, has become the king of very famous pop culture-friendly one-liners. From Groot to the Giant to just saying family over and over. He knows how to get those signatures out there. But yeah, the voice acting is like so good. I also like how it sounds like something that came out of the 1950s. So it looks like a cartoon that's very reminiscent of the Superman cartoons from the 1950s. Even the sound design, the tone, the music, the way it moves, the weird lines or the thick lines in the art style or the drawings. Everything looks so well packaged. And you don't see the seams. Like, I don't know how they did that, but I wish there were more movies that did that after The Iron Giant as well.
Yeah, this movie really made me miss 2D animation and how beautiful it can be, right? Because there are some scenes. So the movie opens with a scene of really real turmoil and peril, right? The Iron Giant has landed. There's a storm at sea. There's somebody who's in danger. And that whole sequence is so beautifully done. It served to highlight another thing that I really liked about the film, which is that the peril is very real. In that first sequence, I genuinely believed that this movie killed somebody in its first minute. And that kind of sense of adult loss, because as a child, you kind of take it for granted that this is not going to happen. Nobody dies. I'm 5 years old. Death is really far away. And when you grow up, I think that's not necessarily the case anymore. And so I think the Iron Giant really hits the mark with that idea of peril, that idea of very real stakes. And it makes the movie that much more meaningful.
Oh, for sure. I spent, despite knowing where the movie was going to go, I spent the last 40 minutes of it just like terrified, emotionally wrought, crying, clutching things. It really does create the tension and the fear of something going terribly wrong. I also wanted to say that it reminded me of how, in terms of the animation, the exact reason why Pixar steered away from doing human faces for so long, because you see the way they animate expressions and faces on the characters in this film, and computers couldn't do that for a really long time. I don't think they still can, not as well as hand-drawn animation could and continues to do. And the Iron Giant is such a great example, the way Kent Mansley, the FBI agent's face stretches, or the way Hogarth's face shows you just wonder when he looks at something. I don't think we've still reached those levels when it comes to using computers to animate.
I mean, the stuff they do with the Iron Giant's eyes alone, just like, he doesn't even have eyeballs technically, like he's not looking at anything particularly, but just the light in his eyes and the way it moves is so incredible. Like, you know exactly what he's thinking and when and whether he's a threat or not a threat. I also wanted to say that I think the Iron Giant is the reason why I don't like stuff like The Boys, and I don't actually like Watchmen all that much. And I think this is the movie to blame, because a lot of these like newer superhero stuff, Watchmen isn't new, but it's like it was, kind of like ahead of its time. Like to ask the question of what would you do if you had like ultimate power? What if you were a weapon? Like, what if these things became bad or turned on us and stuff? And I feel like those are easy questions to ask. And I think I feel it's easy because of the Iron Giant, because it's more difficult to ask, what would you do if you were a weapon, but you chose kindness or compassion, or you didn't want to be the weapon that you were built to be? And I think like watching that sort of took away my enjoyment for all these other shows, all these other like new and edgy shows that come out and go like, what if they turned on us, or what if they use power and stuff? And I kind of like it. I kind of like not being able to enjoy that, because it means that I get to enjoy the Iron Giant all the more and way more than I should, I think.
I think for me, the Iron Giant is one of those films that is a rewatch. I understand why it is so rewatchable, because it's so layered. There are so many themes. And also, if you just want to watch like a really fun adventure film that's beautifully drawn, beautifully animated, really, really well acted, then enjoy that. But if on the other hand, you're feeling kind of low and you want to watch a film that talks about, what it means to grieve, what it means to face loss, what it means to rebuild yourself, then it's also for you. And if you want to watch a superhero film, it's also that. And so I think, I kind of love the fact that it stands alone. I know that it's so good that it deserved more attention, it deserved more settings, but I really like the fact that it's almost like an artifact, that it's something that just stands alone. It is its own thing.
And it also does something that very few other films do and still don't do, in the sense that, we talked about this in one of our shows before, about how everything feels the need to be sort of different and edgy, like you said, Armin. I like that animation, and increasingly even that is getting rare, that there's still spaces where things are unabashedly sort of sweet at its heart. And I think it's nice to look back at a film like The Iron Giant that still feels fresh today, timeless, if not fresh. And it's nice to have those kinds of things to watch once in a while that cover, it's intelligent. It puts in a lot of work. There's effort, but it's also not sort of, oh, you're so lame for just wanting a little bit of goodness in your life. And this film doesn't do that. And I love that it doesn't.
I mean, we've spoken about this before, right? I think this film, it's another one of those films that suffers from non-Disneyfication. It's that it's because it doesn't feel like Disney or it doesn't behave like Disney, so people sort of see it as inferior to Disney, when it's not. It really isn't. So I think for anyone who hasn't seen The Iron Giant, it's definitely like worth a shot. It's also very easy to watch. It's like, what, 1.5 hours at most, like 1 hour, 30 minutes. It's one of those things that if you watch it, you will kind of understand why Pixar is the way Pixar is. And I think it all goes back to animations like The Iron Giant.
So we've been talking today about The Iron Giant, which was released in 1999. Brad Bird's directorial debut before he went on to do a bunch of Pixar-y and Mission Impossible-y things. So let us know, did you watch it when it first came out? Have you rewatched it? Or like me, did you watch it for the first time fairly recently? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.